Accessing.
When TV and radio collide.
Love it. Wow.
This is what you get. You're listening to JJ and Alex. Presented by G2G Bars.
Don't touch that dial.
On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
The change of scenario for Zach Wilson, I think, is going to be a good one. I don't know how many coordinators he had in the time he was there, but I want to say it's at least two. It might have been three, Stoke. As you know, for a young quarterback, the best way to really, I think, screw a young quarterback up is to change coordinators on him every single year. And it drives me crazy.
That's why you want to go to a solid team like the New York Jets. The now New England Patriots, they seem to just be on a real good streak of keeping a lot of good offensive coaches. There you go.
You can go to the Chicago Bears where quarterbacks go to die.
Hey, listen, that's why Caleb Williams. That's the only reason why Caleb Commanders. Williams should be nervous. Yeah, name them all off. There's so many others.
The list of Browns starting quarterbacks is hilarious. Now, have you ever seen it?
That's crazy.
Since they came back, like the expansion Browns. After they took it away and brought it back, like they have had one. Like it's like a list of 30 guys and they all suck.
I think 2013, one of my last years in Pittsburgh, they had 12 different quarterbacks that year.
Oh my gosh.
Because they brought so many in through free agency and waivers, and like they just had a crap ton. So yeah.
Well, even last year when they actually won games,
right?
They had to go get
three, four Flacco off the couch.
They had
in week
to get
seven.
Joe Flacco. Yeah. They went through three last year.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Nuts. I love watching chaos on other teams. Now, if you're an NFL fan, you don't love seeing chaos. And by the way, a franchise that has had great success with quarterbacks over the years, the Denver Broncos, are trying to figure out what their future looks like. Andrew Mason joining us, covers the Broncos for Denver Sports, our sibling station across the mountains there, part of that Bonneville family. Andrew, thanks for being a part of the program today, man.
My pleasure. Good to talk to you guys.
All right, so you wrote up a story, and we took great interest in it because it has all the drama. We laughed about the possibility of Zach Wilson maybe coming to the Denver Broncos and went, wow, if only. That'd be so hilarious. And then here we are now after he got traded to the Broncos. And Peyton Manning, you did a story about his reaction to Zach Wilson, and he heard some of that, obviously, on the way in of what he had talked about. But what was the takeaway from what Zach Wilson is coming into Denver per the view of Peyton Manning and his Hall of Fame eyes?
I mean, I think this is something that Peyton Manning does for, you know, Broncos quarterbacks who come in. I mean, he reached out to Russell Wilson. I mean, they would actually have some meetings together. He when they drafted Drew Lock in 2019, he reached out to him. So, you know, Peyton Manning's very much a part of the Broncos sphere to this day. Like in that same interview, he was joking about how when his kids are having practice near the Broncos facility, he goes by the Broncos facility and just gets some snacks from the cafeteria. So being very much still part of the Broncos family, I think he kind of takes it as, you know, part of his role to welcome that quarterback in and, you know, and show some optimism for that player coming in.
We were talking on the show. We felt like Denver would be a perfect fit for Zach Wilson. The opposite of what he's had in New York is, you know, not such a brutal media market, not so many expectations, a great quarterback coach instead of no quarterback coach. So it seems like the perfect fit for him. Based on from people you've talked to and what you've heard over there, why did the Broncos want Zach?
They wanted another veteran in there all along. Like that was kind of a key thing. You go back to the start of free agency, they were in on Sam Darnold, but the Vikings upped their ante on Sam Darnold, willing to give him $10 million on a one-year deal. And the Broncos being in a significant cap crunch after absorbing $85 million of dead money for Russell Wilson over the next 2 years, including 53 this year. Because of that, that was a bridge too far for them, and so Darnold went to Minnesota. They were in on conversations about acquiring Sam Howell from Washington. Howell, of course, eventually went to Seattle in a trade, and part of that was the Broncos – not only limited in cash resources, but limited in draft capital. They don't have a second-round pick this year as a result of deals they've made. So they ultimately lost out on Sam Howell to Seattle. But they are specifically looking for a veteran quarterback who could have some possible upside. And so you look at Sam Darnold, former top five pick, that struggled with the Jets, seemed to get back on track in Carolina briefly, and then was a backup last year in San Francisco. And Sam Howell, recent draft pick, started last year, had some ups and downs in Washington. So that kind of fits the template of a type of quarterback that Sean Payton's had some success with. He turned around Kerry Collins back with the Giants when he was an assistant coach there. Got Teddy Bridgewater back to being a starting quarterback, to where Teddy got a starting contract with Carolina in 2020 after backing up in New Orleans. Even got a good seven games out of Jameis Winston after he left Tampa Bay before Winston tore his ACL. Those are all, you know, first-round picks that he got something out of. So he kind of likes that idea of taking a distressed asset that was once a coveted asset in the draft and seeing if he can get something out of that. The thing with Zach Wilson, though, is how much of his struggles were coaching and environment related, and how much of it was on him and maybe him being overdrafted, because he got drafted number two after that COVID year with nobody in the stands and no Power Five opponents, Power Five at the time, on BYU schedule. And I think that COVID year is part of what led to a very high miss rate on quarterbacks in that first round. Four out of five have been traded 3 years later. And I think the fact that the COVID year with no fans in the stands, altered environment, I think it led to some bad evaluation. I think Zach Wilson, respectfully, should have probably been drafted a lot lower and would have been drafted a lot lower in a normal year.
I want to know then what the draft looks like for this Broncos team, because, look, it's one thing to bring in some guys, distress asset. That's a new title for somebody, by the way, that we've gotten. What was your role? I'm a distressed asset.
I like that.
That's my new role. So what does that first round look like then? Because Denver has been tied to a quarterback, you know, fill in the blank. If it's J.J. McCarthy or Bo Nix or even Michael Penix Jr., you've seen all sorts of names tied to that. So what are the thoughts? What are the real needs in that, at that number 12 spot for the Broncos? And do they maybe even trade up to even get somebody else they love?
Well, quarterback is the number one need. I mean, even with Zach Wilson doesn't change that. And the price the Broncos paid for Zach Wilson, it's basically a lottery ticket at this point. If they can get something out of him, great, but that can't be your primary plan. Poor coaching only explains so much of being in the bottom three quarterbacks over the last 3 years in a lot of efficiency metrics. And that's where Zach Wilson has been for the course of his career so far. So moving up, I think they're very intrigued by J.J. McCarthy. They met with him in person in Ann Arbor last month. Problem is, you have a team that is coming out of 2 years without a first-round pick after the Russell Wilson deal, and a roster that still has a lot of holes. It's pretty depleted. And as they're looking at roster construction, can they really afford the cost of moving up to take J.J. McCarthy, which could be as much as either trading three first-round picks or having a deal with two first-round picks and their best player, Pat Surtain. And that, I think, is going to end up being a bridge too far for them. There is some interest from teams in moving up to that number 12 spot, and that may make the most sense. If you gave the truth serum to people inside the Broncos and said, how do you want this night to work? I think they would probably say trade down, get a second round pick, and after the trade down, get Bo Nix at quarterback, who doesn't have all the arm talent of J.J. McCarthy, but in terms of being able to execute the rhythm and timing off aspects of Sean Payton's offense, he appears to be able to do that very well.
That leads right into my question I had for you. The fact that the Broncos don't have a second-round pick, at least right now, how does that frame what they're trying to do in this draft? We know how important second-round picks are.
I think it's very important. I mean, I think that second-round pick, the lack thereof, it hangs over this because – with Bo Nix, it's possible that he may still be on the board at the end of the night. And if you had a second round pick, then you could be more patient, or you could even say, okay, we got a second round pick and Bo Nix has slid to pick 31. Maybe let's trade back into round one and get him on the fifth year option that you get with a first round pick. So unfortunately for the Broncos, that possibility is off the table, lacking a second round pick. And it was interesting to see a lot of the mock drafts out there. A bunch of them had the Broncos taking Bo Nix, but with the caveat that if they had a second round pick, I don't think they would be taking Bo Nix here, but they don't have that. So maybe you have to force it a bit. And so, cause the right spot for Bo Nix in terms of risk, reward, and value may actually be somewhere between pick 20 and pick 40 in this draft.
Or you find a team that is that has a bunch of distressed assets, and you say, "Hey, we want you, kid. You're more of a second round guy, but we need you right now." So it's intriguing to think about it in that respect, right? I mean, like, it's actually wild. Sly, I know you've got a question. It looked like you had a question here going on.
I do. Do you believe this is going to be a QB heavy draft? I mean, we were talking about these teams possibly trading down. You know, the Vikings trading up, teams like the Patriots trading down and the Broncos trading down and possibly getting somebody in second round. But I see a lot of these teams still in the later part of that round that could use quarterbacks, right? You got the Raiders who still need quarterback. Mm-hmm. You got teams like the Cowboys who are trying to find, you know, possibly Dak Prescott's replacement here in a couple years. I don't know if Tampa Bay truly believes in Baker Mayfield to be a long-term play. So, I mean, if you trade down so much, some of these other teams could have the possibility, even the Cardinals have a second pick in the first round. Could they possibly jump up and take a Bo Nix if the Broncos are still thinking that, you know, Bo Nix will be there later on in draft?
It's possible. I mean, I know, for example, the Los Angeles Rams have done a lot of homework on Bo Nix at this point, and that's an interesting spot because Matthew Stafford had
a terrific
season last year. Yeah, I mean, after all the injuries he battled through in 2022, I mean, he's a guy who appears to be on borrowed time at this point. So it would be wise for them to plan for the future. And then also, if you're one of those teams, you're looking at next year's draft class, and inevitably there will be somebody who rises up on the strength of a big season, kind of like Joe Burrow did back in 2019. But right now you're probably looking at a top three of Shedeur Sanders from Colorado, Quinn Ewers from Texas, Carson Beck from Georgia. With Shedeur Sanders, there's talent there, but the dude hasn't played for a coach other than his dad. And I kind of worry about that he's been in these environments where he's had his father facilitating things perfectly, and that's not going to happen in the NFL.
It's Deion now. We can't say that. Deion speaks values. He could be in many places.
Yeah, but like if there were any other player other than the son of Deion Sanders, and you said he's only played for his father since high school, that would be a red flag on the evaluation.
Right.
Why wouldn't it be a red flag on the evaluation here? It's a concern I have.
Right.
It's a legit concern. There's no doubt about that. I would stay away. Let's get down to the real topic here, the thing we really want to talk about. I know the NFL draft's going on. The Zach Wilson trade's a big deal. What I really want to talk about is the new uniforms.
Oh, boy. See, now the real Bronco fandom starts to come out of JJ.
Okay. He sounded pissed when he even brought that up.
He's like, I got something I want to say right now about these new jerseys.
Andrew, help us out. What are they thinking, and how has the fan reaction been to these new uniforms?
Well, the reaction has been mixed.
You're being kind, aren't you?
Well,
is anyone like, oh my gosh, those are awesome?
There are actually a few fans that have said they really like the uniforms. I think the thing is, the easy thing for them to do would have been, let's just go with the throwbacks and call it a day. And that would have been kind of the fan service thing, and people would have loved that. But I'll say this. I went back and looked when the Broncos changed uniforms the last time previously, back in 1997. And the reactions at the time, it was pre-social media, of course, so it was a lot of comments that were printed in newspapers and that sort of thing. The comments were almost universally harsh. So I compare that with the comments out there this week, and I even threw a poll out there and asked, okay, what grade would you give the Broncos' new uniform set, not counting the throwbacks? And among the 2,600-plus votes, 64.1% said A or B. So that's about the best you're going to get. If you get 64% saying it's an A or B grade on the on new uniforms, which, frankly, because human beings have trouble with change, we're sort of conditioned to not accept that. I think that's as good as you were going to get. It is an improvement. The uniforms they just ditched were awful. Like, the players look like ambulatory parentheses walking around with that big those big swooshes on the side. To me, they actually look like a pro football team again.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And, you know, I was surprised by that. I'm glad you shared that. That's interesting that it had that much of an approval rating from fans that you polled. I'm old school. I'm 46 years old. I love the old orange. The throwbacks they're going to wear this year are what I wish they would go back to.
I know. That's what everybody's waiting for. It's like
like the Raiders. It's like all the best. Like the Cowboys. Yeah. The best brands and teams in sports don't have to change it because they got it right the first time. I love the throwback, the orange crush from the 70s and 80s.
Yeah. It's a beautiful uniform. And I wonder if a few years from now, what the perspective is going to be, because something that we've seen recently, like look at the New York Jets, for example, they started working in the 1980s throwbacks, and here we are this year, and they're going to basically that look full time with a few twists on it, like a black alternate uniform, green pants, which they did not have in the 1980s, that sort of thing. And I wonder if a few years from now, if they evaluate the market, they may say, okay, maybe it's time to go back to the old one. The thing is, I think there was a very strong desire to keep the current logo, which they've had since 1997. And there are a lot of reasons for that. They did a fan survey, and majority of the fans they surveyed said keep the logo. But the other thing is, you're sitting here, you're in a stadium, your lease is up in 2031. They're already starting to kind of lay the groundwork for plans to maybe build a new one. You got a lot of things that you'd have to replace if you got rid of that horse head logo, right? So,
well,
I see the logic there.
Yeah, I think a lot of folks too. I mean, when you win when you finally get over the hump and win a couple Super Bowls with your Hall of Fame quarterback in those colors, then there is a little bit of like going back to the jerseys that, no offense, JJ, but they lost a lot in, too. They had a lot of heartbreak.
Hey, at least they got there.
I know, it's true. All right. No, it's nice. The Navy makes them look like UTEP. That's what I'm going to call them, the UTEP of the NFL.
Well, somebody was joking. Yeah, they looked like UTSA, the Roadrunners.
Oh, the Roadrunners. Yeah.
That was the one I thought. You're right. That is exactly
They almost
what
have like a
like.
Charger bolt on the shoulder,
that
which is kind of nice for, you know, just a little nod to your conference or to your division mates. That's nice. It's nice.
It's like a one kind of like a one fit, like a one slash kind of thing. It's supposed to evoke some of the jagged landscapes around here, like the Flatirons, Red Rocks, that sort of thing. And so, like, from one angle, it does look like, if you see it from one angle, it's like, oh, it's a Charger thing. And then you see it from another angle, you see the whole sleeve pattern on the side, and it doesn't look like a Charger thing, at least to me.
Andrew Mason covers the Broncos for Denver Sports. Last question here for you. I wanted to sneak this one in because now Sean Payton has the ability to be able to put his fingerprints on a team, and there's no longer going to be the I didn't pick these guys, you know, type of an attitude. He's going to be in the war room, of course. What is Sean Payton right now for this community, and what is it that he's going to try to accomplish going into this next season here? Is it just about forgetting the old Russell Wilson times that they had, or is it more just about, hey, fresh start begins now?
I think fresh start begins now. I think it's also continuing the process of culture building. And it's something of a long-term process. And I think you may be looking at this year in terms of the record having a step backward to make a leap forward, depending on – it may depend on tonight and if they do get a quarterback, how quickly they can get that quarterback up to speed. The one thing that, to their credit, they did last year, they improved their special teams. They also improved their offensive line. They won some games at the margins last year that they had been losing in previous years. So I think it's just continuing that process. Now, the interesting thing tonight, fellas, is who's going to carry the day philosophically? We talk about trading down. That's what George Payton prefers to do. He believes in the more darts strategy, accumulate darts, draft picks, and get more by trading down. Sean Payton's history in New Orleans was, if you love a player, go up and get him. So I think it'll be fascinating to see which philosophy ends up carrying the day tonight. It may end up being trade down by default simply because it takes too much to trade up. But if J.J. McCarthy drops to pick 7, then I think you may see the Broncos burning up the phones.
All right, Andrew Mason, you can read his byline there, denversports.com. And we love having you on, Andrew. Appreciate it. Good job on that story with Zach Wilson and Peyton Manning. And have fun with the draft tonight. Should be a really fun one.
Will do, and I've actually got another story up at denversports.com because Mark Schlereff came on y'all's air yesterday and suggested that he thinks Zach Wilson's going to be the number one, the week one starter for the Broncos this year. So you can check that out, denversports.com as well.
Oh, there you go. All right, we'll take the break here. There's Andrew Mason, denversports.com. We will come back. We've got more to go around the corner. You don't want to miss it. Stay right here, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You're locked into JJ and Alex with the insight and analysis on the teams you can't live without. Presented by G2G Bars. This is 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
I'm Eminem. This is Roger Goodell. And we are so fired up this year for the NFL Draft.
Live from the D.
You can just say Detroit.
That's what I said.
You said the D.
Detroit!
Am I being punked?
D.
Oh, wow. Look at Drake May. He's like, I have no idea how I am going to be in the top 5 picks, but I'm there. He's like, sure, invite me to New York or invite me to Detroit. Let me meet Eminem.
More importantly, like he should be on the Sandlot.
You know what he kind of looks like to me is a, and maybe this bodes well for him. I mean, he has a little bit of a Brock Purdy mixed with a, wait, who's the guy from, is it, oh yeah, we got a 49er fan in studio. I forgot. We got to watch ourselves because the 49er fans, they're running laps on everybody right now. It's fine. Speaking of Detroit, the amount of people that are now willing to wear jerseys in public?
I didn't know there was
Detroit Lions jersey.
Yes. Where have all these Lions fans been?
Oh, they have a huge. So if you're watching the draft on TV, there is a Aiden Hutchinson banner that's on the side of one of their huge buildings. They have a team that they can get excited about. That's a pretty cool thing for Detroit since they haven't really had a lot of teams to get excited about. So that's a fun deal. Our program is always brought to you by G2G Bars, all natural ingredients and no preservatives make the G2G Bar perfect for anybody who needs a quick, tasty, nutritious boost. And also, Doug Smith Dealerships in American Fork and Spanish Fork. Kia, Subaru, Chevy, Jeep, Dodge, Ram, all part of the Doug Smith Dealership family. Great service starts with know-how and nobody knows like Doug. Yeah, there you go. Hey, this is a conversation that if you missed, go to the podcast page of KSLSports.com and click on DJ and PK's show, and I want you to do some homework and listen to Merrill Hodge, former NFLer. Was he an Idaho State Bengal, too?
He was. When I was growing up, yeah, I remember it because, you know, Pocatello's just over the hill.
Oh, yeah.
And he was incredible. Idaho State won a FCS national championship in 1980. He was not on that team, but he came along later.
Boy, you think about the great Idaho State guys. Merrill Hodge.
Long list.
Well, right? No, listen, Kyle Whittingham was on that coaching staff after
That's
his
how
NFL
he got
career
started.
Is over. There
That's
you go.
Where he got started.
All right. I do want you to listen to some of the things that he said, because quarterback specifically, we talked about this, and Andrew Mason from Denver Sports brought this up, and it was like, look, you overhyped that 21 class, and it was affected a lot by that COVID year. Zach Wilson is a yeah. perfect example of that, right?
Yep.
Maybe somebody who got overrated because of how he did against not as good a competition. So what's the excuse this year then for us to look at this heavy quarterback class? And maybe they all turn out to be amazing, JJ, but based off of what Merrill Hodge said about this quarterbacking class, here's what he said on DJ and PK today. I cannot wait for us to break this all down too with Sly. So here's what he said about a first-round quarterback if you're taking one in the draft tonight.
No, first of all, there's no C.J. Stroud in this one. There's no Joe Burrow. Okay, so – and all these guys are getting pushed up. Half of them aren't even first-rounders. I mean, and that's not the kid's problem. That's the organization's problem. That's the evaluator's problem, okay? It's the stupidity of the people who are supposed to know how to build a team, because they don't build teams, you know. And that's why a lot of them get fired. Listen, I wouldn't touch Drake May in the first round. There's one guy I would stay away from, the kind of guy that gets you fired, because he is being anointed as the top three pick. Where they have compared him to the two things I talked about, decision-making and processing, he is as erratic a player as I've ever seen. And Will Levis, you remember last year went to the second round, he was as bad as I thought I'd seen until I've seen Drake May. Now, I could put a highlight reel together on Drake May, and you'd be like, oh, my gosh, he makes some throws that are more incredible than any of the quarterbacks. But if you look at his body of work, he is erratic short, intermediate, and vertical. Right, left, clean pocket, dirty pocket, doesn't even matter. He's got elongated throwing motion, feet are below average. He's a lumbering kind of guy. He's slow twitch, not fast twitch. Daniels out of LSU is probably the most polished, but he is not C.J. Stroud, not even close. So there's nobody that is going to come in and take over the league like C.J. Stroud or Joe Burrow. They don't exist. And all these other guys are getting pushed up. They should be second or third rounders, but they're going to push in the first round. And then they have that expectation of that. And that's the thing that's going to be damaging to them, that expectation of that. I like Bo Nix. I love Bo Nix. I think he's rock solid across the board, but that's it. That's not a first rounder. First rounders, you know, you've got a Troy Aikman, John Elway's, Peyton Manning's, C.J. Stroud's, now Joe Burrow's. I mean, that's what you have. That's what every fan and organization is going to expect. And when you can't live up to that, that's when the fallout begins. And it's not the player's fault. It's the organization's fault and the evaluator's fault.
I miss Merrill Hodge breaking it down on ESPN, going
scorched earth.
All these kids, yeah. They're terrible.
The best part of waking up is Merrill Hodge in your cup. This guy did not get his coffee this morning.
Is he wrong? Do you think he's wrong?
No, he let it loose, and I absolutely loved every single part of it. I wouldn't touch Drake May with a 10-foot pole. He's like, and he's absolutely right. You saw it at his pro day. He was erratic throwing an out route on air.
I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't get it. And he's like, these guys are being pushed up. But there's the hype. This quarterback, it's all about hype. And I wonder, this is one thing I wonder. I wonder if these scouts and these people in these war rooms hear what he's saying, and that affects people's draft stock.
I hope
that. I mean, it's all about feeling on draft day.
What did he say? This is the kind of guy that'll get you fired when you pick him. Like when you pick Drake May,
that's huge.
You're gone.
Because they can snip that out from Merrill Hodge saying that and play it over and over and go viral on the internet, and then some owner being like, "You didn't hear Merrill Hodge say this, and you still picked him? You're out of here, for real." So like, everything he said was great, but he sounded like he didn't get his coffee. He was pissed.
Well, not only that, it's like the only one that's worth first round talent, if I'm understanding it right, was basically Caleb Williams. Everybody else got kind of pushed up.
He thought maybe Jaden Daniels, right? He was positive about Jaden Daniels. He liked some of those things.
He really likes Bo Nix as a second round guy.
Well, that's it. Let's think about this,
it's
guys.
It's not terrible to be a second round guy, though.
15, 20 years ago, you wouldn't see six quarterbacks go in the first round, right?
Right, right.
So what has happened in the league where all these teams feel they've got to reach for quarterbacks early in the first round?
Let's get good right now. We got to be good right now.
It's desperate. It feels desperate because throughout time, you've been able to find great quarterback value throughout the draft. Brock Purdy right now is Mr. Irrelevant. The greatest quarterback of all time, Tom Brady.
Sixth round.
Russell Wilson, third round. I'm still bitter, but you know what? He was really good in Seattle. He was a third round pick. He mentioned Will Levis there. Will Levis fell to the second round last year. Nobody's saying, wow, Will Levis is a bust, because that's he was a second rounder. It took the pressure off of him.
Right. If he would have gone Drake May, you know,
if
third overall quarterback
number,
or whatever.
Will Levis is number two last year, and you're watching the team with the Titans kind of struggle, you're like, this was a terrible pick. It's not fair to these quarterbacks to put this much pressure on them right out of the gate. They're not ready for it. He's absolutely right. Patrick Mahomes, Jordan Love, those guys had to sit and watch a year or two or three. Patrick Mahomes for a year and he was ready. Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback in the world right now, and he sat for a year. What happened to that?
Right.
It's really important that these guys not rushed and not forced into going out there. Sly, you played in the league. It is violent. Mm. It is brutal. The pressure is insane. And Caleb Williams is like, bring the pressure on. Are you sure, bud? Are you sure?
You couldn't even handle it at USC when the pressure was there. You think that you're going to handle it when the Bears in the NFC North?
And they're going to stink. And they're going to get their butts kicked.
And the Bears, if you are a guy like Caleb Williams, do you think that he's looking at it and he goes, I just really wish not go to Chicago, but I really wish I could go to a situation where I'm not starting in the first year. That's what I'm saying. Do you think the ego allows them to go?
That's what I was talking about.
I want to develop.
And would you rather? No.
No. Did you hear him on the pivot?
There's very few guys that are willing to do that. The egos are too big.
Too big.
The goals, I mean, Caleb Williams probably been thinking he's the next big thing since he was in eighth grade.
Before that.
Right?
Well, he's going to say, I'm better than C.J. Stroud, and look what C.J. Stroud did. That's what he's going to say.
Oh, boy.
Right?
I think Caleb Williams is generational.
Now.
I think he's extremely talented. He's going to be Bryce Young next year.
He thinks that now. He thought he should have come out last year. He would have been the number one overall pick over CJ and Bryce. He thinks that now.
You said on your draft day, you saw guys go and you're like, I'm better than both of those guys. I'm better than all five of those guys.
Oh, countless times.
Right. And so.
Countless times.
Imagine being a quarterback, which is the ego that goes along with a guy winning the Heisman Trophy, a guy coming out of USC. No one's ever said one negative thing about him to his face.
Right.
Right. Except for Utah defenders.
No one's ever told him no.
Except for Utah defenders.
And how did he react to that?
Boo-hoo. He wanted to go home and cuddle with his dog.
Like a spoiled brat. He acted like in losing those games. He acted like somebody didn't give him his toy.
Hey.
He went on the sideline and sulked.
That's the leader. That's the leader's Da Bears.
Oh, my goodness.
Da Bears.
Da Bears.
That pick, bro.
Stevenson Sylvester. Sly's presence on the show today, by the way, brought to you by Rancherito Burritos. Right? that's how he got the fuel to get through the show today.
I would love that sponsorship right there.
We'll take another break here. We'll come back. Let's put a nice little bow on.
You're still thinking about the burritos?
Sly, I am too.
I was going to say, JJ and I are in a dark spot right now.
I know you are. That's why I didn't want to bring it up.
Hey, you know what? But guess what? Proof's in the pudding. I'm down 20-something pounds right now, baby. All right?
You guys look good. That's why I was like, I'm not going to be your drug dealer.
and just dangle it. Free.
If you put a burrito in front of me, I'd try to snort it.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We've got more to go around the corner. Let's put a bow on yesterday's coverage of that NHL announcement, the introduction of the team, everybody there. We took the press conference live. We didn't get to do much afterward, JJ, but I do have some reaction from people who I was able to talk to. I did my own man-on-the-street interviews afterwards. So we'll chat about that and much more. Stay right here with us, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Home for the best coverage of the Jazz, Utes, and Cougars is right here on The Zone. This is JJ and Alex, presented by G2G Bars on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
When Ryan and Ashley again were talking last week, they were talking about people. That's what culture is all about. I think star guys out there, but set out there, there's the people behind the scene who make things happen, and that's part of the culture. I think I agree with you when you said those guys are the hardest working team in the league, and they fight every night for their team, for their brother. I love that about them, but as well, there's a lot of staff, a lot of people who make that happen, and I'm so happy to see them today when we get off the plane, being with us, getting in the trenches together. So it's a beautiful day.
Hi, Utah. I want to hear something here. Spicy tuna. Spicy tuna.
Woo!
Oh my goodness. There were some real moments yesterday. My favorite part about all that was, well, first of all, Andre Tourney, the head coach, also announced today as the head coach of Team Canada. That's no small thing either. I mean, you're talking about Team Canada is always a favorite to win the world championships. And when Utah has the head coach of the national team, it's one of the best national teams in the entire world. It shows you the level of talent from the head coaching spot that you're getting. What would be a comparable pick of an NBA head coach that somebody could think of right now that would kind of be the Andre Tourney of the NBA, I guess, right now?
Steve Kerr, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
it was Popovich, and now it's Steve Kerr doing it, right? So there you go.
Would you take a Steve Kerr right now?
Of course.
If you're putting a team together?
Yeah.
No, absolutely.
I mean, he's got a resume that's as good as anybody that's currently coaching. Absolutely.
Liam O'Brien, by the way, that was the and then Lawson Krause even brought it right back around again and goes, let's hear it for spicy tuna, everybody.
I'm trying to imagine an NBA player starting a spicy tuna chant.
My name's Liam O'Brien. You guys can call me Spicy Tuna.
That soundbite will live on forever. I left there and went straight to my son's baseball game last night. And the conversations that I had were, and I told you, one of my buddies, Matt, is, here's how insane of a Golden Knights fan he is. He's got a big old, he's got the Golden Knights tattoo, but it's not enough.
Yeah, a tattoo.
It's not just a tattoo. He's got this full-on Stanley Cup that like kind of comes through
Cup and
I
everything.
Can't wait till JJ gets a Yeti in the middle of his chest.
Big lower back tattoo for JJ.
Too many jokes. Too many jokes.
So I was asking him about it. I go, that's going to be awkward when you become a Utah hockey fan and you've got that Stanley Cup on your arm. No, but everybody else who's not a quote-unquote kind of dyed-in-the-wool hockey fan, started out their conversation with me with, you know, I'm not even that big of a hockey fan, but how many people did we meet yesterday where that was the case, where it's like, you know, I'm not really a hockey guy, but this is something awesome. That's different over here.
Yeah.
The amount of energy that we saw yesterday, and people were asking us what really was the number. I don't know what a number would have been, because you're talking about 18,500, 20,000 maybe that inside the stadium. And then there was another 5,000 to 8,000 outside on the plaza that were not they couldn't get in.
Didn't even notice when they opened the doors because the amount of people on the plaza never changed.
Right.
At least that's how it felt.
So to put a bow on everything that happened yesterday, I kind of want to know if you walked away from that, JJ, and feel any different than we did, kind of knowing how exciting it was going to be. I don't think anything prepared me yesterday for what we actually ended up seeing.
That was special. And I said it yesterday, and I'll say it again here. What we witnessed yesterday was a team who's been through a lot and has been through some rough times and didn't realize that their experience in Arizona was not normal. Come here and in one day realize, oh, wow.
There's something. Yeah.
This is how it's supposed to be. And for them to feel that yesterday, what we watched yesterday in real time was a connection and a bond between a team and this community. And they've already won everybody over, and we won them over. And it was a special thing to witness and watch. I'll never forget it. And I know, I'll follow this team till the day I die. Hopefully that's not soon. But forever and ever, I'll remember that day when it all started. And everybody that was there yesterday will remember the day when it all started. And they'll remember being there and having that connection with this team. So when this team wins 5 Stanley Cups in the next 20 years.
There you go.
You're going to remember these moments.
Wait, how many years did you say?
5 and 20.
I like it.
Yeah, me too. I'm already visualizing the Labatt Blue inside
we were talking
of the Stanley.
That.
We're drinking out of the Stanley Cup.
Blue. We were talking about that, and they're like, I was like, they're going to have to expand their horizons.
The Molson Ice.
Yeah. If you're looking at this from the outside in, you had all of these guys who had their lives totally, you know, ripped out from under them. Some of these folks had been, you know, it's not just that they were playing there. Their houses are there. They're selling their houses right now. They're trying to figure it out. And then they come here. So I know it's not all been fun, because we heard Bill Armstrong talking about it. We heard Andre Tourney talking about it, because they're like, well, now we can talk about it. It was awkward. It was a really hard time. Mm-hmm. It was a hard few months. And it was difficult for these kids. That's why Bill Armstrong got emotional, right? Was because He goes, these kids behind me. It wasn't because of his own personal, like, I get to come to a city where there's a lot of people now.
He's
and an ownership.
Had to work for that piece of crap owner down in Arizona and had to put up with all this BS.
That blamed everybody.
He's free. It's got to feel so refreshing for him to be able to breathe.
Absolutely.
And not have to put up with that crap and have to trade guys and get rid of great prospects because they won't pay him. Now he's got an owner that gives a crap. Now he's got an owner that's going to say, you know what? Does this make us better? Does this help us win? Let's go do it. Let's do it. Yeah, let's fix this. Let's make this happen.
All right, let's take another break. We will come back. If you didn't hear Merrill Hodges' thoughts on the quarterback class overall, fear not, because we actually have some more sound from him concerning Caleb Williams specifically. So we'll get his thoughts on what Caleb Williams could or may not be. I'm just looking at the game day, guys, and they just said the most NFL-ready guy is J.J. McCarthy,
that's
by the way.
That's Desmond Howard. That's the most.
Come on, Des.
I'm flipping out at that. I'm just like,
oh,
man.
He's a masterpiece of dog shit.
Oh, for sure. He said that J.J. McCarthy would be rookie of the year. That's what his guess was.
Once you're dyed in the maize and blue, man, you don't walk away from it. Even if it's a terrible take.
That was the worst biased pick ever.
All right, we'll take the break here. That was him paying off some bet. And if you do it, you have to say on game day that he's the most NFL ready. I'll do it. Fine. All right, we'll come back. We got more to go. Stay with us. 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.